Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi everyone, welcome along to this special international edition of the La Liga Lowdown mini-pod with Radio Stakhanov and broadcasts on SiriusXM FC 157. This week we're focusing mainly on the Spain national team after their two games in the last week, one a friendly, the other in the UEFA Nations League, as Spain played Wales away last Thursday and then England in Seville on Monday night. We'll also be touching on the under-21s and the under-19s, plus we'll look ahead to the return of La Liga this coming weekend. I'll be chatting to two other members of the La Liga Lowdown squad in this mini pod, Ewan McTeer a bit later on. But first, let's just catch up with Román de Arquer, who is in Barcelona, to recap, I suppose, a week of extremes for La Roja after that game against England. How are you, first of all, Román?
Hi, David. Very good and ready to talk about the games we just saw recently.
Yeah, let's start off then with the 2-3 defeat to England on Monday night. I mean, this was a mad game, wasn't it? At the Estadio Benito Villamarín, which is a pretty mad place at the best of times. Spain had only lost there once in 13 previous games. And the team that started this game read as follows. David De Gea in goal, Johnny Otto at right back, Nacho, Sergio Ramos, and Marcos Alonso, that was the rest of the back four. Thiago, Busquets and Saúl was the midfield, and then Iago Aspas, Rodrigo and Marco Asensio as the front three. Let's just take you through the goals because there were five of them. Raheem Sterling on 16 minutes, and this came from England really playing quite well at the back, and then an excellent pass from Harry Kane to Marcus Rashford, and then from Rashford into Sterling, and he finished emphatically. So that was 1-0, which became 2-0 just before the half hour. This time a long ball catching Spain out, Kane holding it up really well, and then an excellent ball in for Rashford to finish. And then, would you believe it, England 3-0 up on 38 minutes, and again it's Raheem Sterling. But this was a different type of goal. Superb movement, Spain failing to clear their lines. Ross Barkley chip over the top, Harry Kane centering and Sterling finishing from close range. So unbelievably, Spain 3-0 down at half time. But things did change in the second half, especially with the subs. Paco Alcácer had just come on as a substitute barely a minute before, and he heads home from a corner. Then there were penalty shouts for both sides, for Sterling for England and Rodrigo for Spain. And then pretty much the last action of the game, Sergio Ramos with a header from a Dani Ceballos cross for 3-2. But then the final whistle sounded and there wasn't enough time for Spain to get their equaliser. So, Román, how do you assess that?
Well, I must say it was a very hectic game, like lots of chances on both sides. England were very solid at the back, whereas Spain weren't very good at all, to be honest. Nacho and Ramos struggled quite a lot, but that was beneficial for England, of course, that could counterattack and got those amazing three goals.
I mean, there were amazing three goals because actually they were all slightly different. And then they could have had a chance for a fourth goal with Raheem Sterling going to ground. And it looked like his foot was trampled on a little bit. But, you know, do you think that was a penalty yourself, Román?
Well, I think it could have been a penalty perfectly. There is a clear contact on Sterling. And of course, Sterling falls after that and his chance is gone. So obviously the referee has to interpret what he considers penalty or not. And then I think it could have been, but in the end, he decided not to blow for it.
Yeah, I think the question is really whether it's inside or outside the box on that one. And then perhaps one of the more controversial calls of the game, not to give a penalty to Rodrigo, who got into a bit of a tangle, shall we say, with Jordan Pickford. And then Pickford made an excellent tackle and cleared the ball out for a corner. But did he foul Rodrigo in the process of then getting that tackle in? I have to say, I reckon this one was a penalty. What do you think?
At first, I did think it was a clear penalty. So it looks like he's like pulling Rodrigo back. And because of that, Rodrigo doesn't get to the ball. But then when you see the replay and all its angles, you can see how Pickford does put in his foot right into the ball without touching Rodrigo. There is a bit of shoving before that, but I don't know if it's enough. So it's, again, interpretation of the referee. These are really complicated situations. And I think in this case, it's okay not to give a penalty.
Okay, so no penalties either way. Now, let's just talk about this outcome for Spain, because, well, look, none of us expected this. And it was a very different game to the meeting at Wembley earlier on this autumn when Spain won there by 2-1. And it seemed like the players who pressured England from the front at Wembley just couldn't do it in front of a home crowd in Seville. And I'm looking particularly at Iago Aspas, maybe even Marco Asensio. He seemed like he couldn't quite make the inroads that he wanted to. And in the end, he got frustrated. What happened to those two? And did England do anything different from that game at Wembley?
Well, Marco Asensio, has to be said that he's not going through his best moment at Real Madrid. And I think that might be affecting him in the national team too. He has a lot of pressure from people expecting him to step up for Madrid. And in Spain, he feels a bit more freed, but at the same time, he still has that pressure on him. He's like playing in a certain psychological state, let's say. So I think he tried to do what he does best, but England were quite smart. They closed down the gaps. Their defense was really solid today. I must say that. And Iago Aspas on the other side, he also tried to do what he usually does. But Iago Aspas can have good games with Spain and then other more discreet games. And I think this was one of those discreet games. He tried, but unfortunately England were really solid. The fullbacks were very concentrated, no mistakes. Chilwell, we had doubts whether he would perform at a good level, but it has to be said that he was great. So Southgate studied the game very well. He knew where he made mistakes last game, and I think he corrected them properly this time.
Yeah, I think the change to four at the back made a difference. Gave England a bit more bodies in midfield, if you like, and able to control the game a little bit more, although of course Spain had more possession. And then he switched to three at the back halfway through the second half. And I think that was also significant to try and disrupt Spain's rhythm and just try and give them something else to think about. So Gareth Southgate is clearly still impressing after the World Cup. It's not like, you know, that was a fluke. Let's just bring you some reaction from this game. Well, Sergio Ramos said that they gifted England the first half, really. The positive thing, though, is how the team reacted. And it was a shame because it brought to a halt a good run of form. And what about Luis Enrique, the Spain coach? He said, well, the first half was awful. The first goal killed us, and that they actually made a lot of individual mistakes, but that it will be good to recharge the batteries, analyse players and work out what the next squad will look like for the game in November. But things are still in their hands. They have to win in Croatia to go through to the final four, and that's what he's going to try and do. In terms of statistics, it's the worst half-time deficit that Spain have ever suffered in a game at home in their history. So that's when they were 3-0 down. First time that Spain have lost at home in a competitive game in 39 games. The last was in 2003. They were beaten by Greece in Saragossa in a Euro 2004 qualifier. First time that Spain have ever conceded 3 goals at home in a competitive game, which is really quite something. And it's England's first goals and first victory over Spain in Spain since February 1987. On that occasion, they won 4-2 at the Bernabeu with Gary Lineker scoring all 4 goals. And I think one positive stat for Spain is that Paco Alcácer's 10 shots on target for club and country have resulted in 10 goals, which is absolutely astonishing. Now, here's the big question. Here's the big question. How does this affect the Partidazo Predictions overall table? If you're unaware of what Partidazo Predictions is, it's a video that we do each and every Friday on our YouTube channel. So go check it out. That's youtube.com/C/LaLigaLowdown, or simply put La Liga Lowdown into your search engine if that's easier. Obviously, this time we went for Spain versus England. We all tried to forecast the correct score. We all failed miserably. And by the way, if you get the correct scoreline exactly right, you get 3 points. If you get just the result right but the scoreline wrong, then you get just the 1 point. So Ewan went 3-1, Alex went 3-1, Paco went 2-0, Romain went 2-1, I went 4-1, so I'm the most inaccurate, but none of us win any points here. So Ewan and Paco are joint leaders with 8, and then joint third are Romain, yourself, Alex and me, all on 4 points. So that's how it stands. Now, let's focus on the game last Thursday, which was perhaps a little bit cheerier for Spain fans, as they went to the Principality Stadium in Cardiff and they put 4 past a rather hapless Wales side in a friendly. The team which started this one, slightly different look to it. David De Gea in goal, then you had Azpilicueta, Raul Albiol, Sergio Ramos and Jose Gaya as your back four. A midfield three of Saul, Rodri Hernandez and Dani Ceballos, and then a front three of Suso, Alvaro Morata and Paco Alcácer. That was the 11 that started away to Wales. Let's just take you through the game, because it finished 4-1 to Spain. Paco Alcácer scoring the first. It was a crossfield ball. Wayne Hennessy came to punch it out. The ball just sort of ricocheted around. Alcácer finished well into the top left-hand corner. And then Sergio Ramos headed home at a second, unmarked from a Suso free kick. The third, Alcácer again, more comedy defending here from Wales, couldn't clear their lines. And it was once again the Borussia Dortmund striker who pounced on the volley. And then the fourth and final goal came from another cross. A free kick from Suso again. And it was Mark Bartra with an excellent glancing header that Hennessy could do nothing about. Sam Vokes did score a consolation for Wales late on. So 4-1 the final score. Let's talk a little bit about Paco Alcácer, because this is one bright spot to come out of the international break. He's taken a lot of headlines recently. He's averaging a goal pretty much every half an hour right now. What is he eating? Because I want some. I mean, it's brilliant. He's just hit form out of nowhere after what was a very difficult time at Barcelona. So what do you put it down to, Roman?
It's incredible, to be honest, because he's gone from... He was scoring goals when he had to, but now he's just like freed himself completely. He feels so liberated at Borussia Dortmund. He's found his form. He's scoring goals. I think all that pressure he had at Barcelona is just vanished completely now. And in Borussia Dortmund, they play a way of football that adapts quite well to his style. And when this guy starts scoring, goals and goals and goals just keep coming. And we're seeing it now.
We absolutely are. And I think he is a real option for Luis Enrique. What about one of the other sort of forgotten players? Because Paco Alcácer had been in the sort of international wilderness for some time. What about Suso? He's only actually played in La Liga when he was on loan at Almeria. So actually breaking into the squad in the first place, how much an achievement was that? And how much of an asset is he to Luis Enrique? Because he assisted three of the four goals against Wales on Thursday night.
Suso has been giving really good performances with Milan for the past few years. And to be honest, it was strange that no manager was taking him into account. And it's actually nice that Luis Enrique has thought of him and he's realized that Suso can be a great player to use in certain games. As he's very, very offensive, he goes in deep on the wings, he can cross really well, he can shoot really well. So he gives a lot of alternatives for the team. And he proved that against Wales. He showed that he can cross the ball perfectly, can assist, and he can be a really, really good use for Luis Enrique.
I think it's one of those things, isn't it? We don't see it often in a Spain shirt. An out-and-out winger, a traditional old-school winger who likes to get to the byline, who likes to cross balls in, really put defenses under pressure with the quality of his deliveries. I don't think Spain have too many players that are actually like that. So again, it's a good little change-up that for Lucho. So where are we at with all this? Well, instead of getting, well, essentially it was just a draw that Spain needed against England, that pretty much would have secured them their place in the final four, which is the sort of the first culmination phase, if you like, of the UEFA Nations League next summer. Now they've got to go to Zagreb in November and they've got to do a job there and win. And that will be what will take them through if they do it. So just try and recap this for us, Roman. What positives does Luis Enrique take out of this international break? And what is there that they really need to work on?
Well, I think that the main positive here is definitely the attitude. We've seen how players keep running, keep pressing really high. They really want the ball. They want to score. They want to get the chances. And it's a clear demonstration of how Luis Enrique has transmitted his mentality to the players. So I think that's the best thing we can take out at the moment. The team is playing quite well, to be honest. And where they have to work on is definitely in defense. We've seen how... Well, against England, these three goals, they could have been avoided if the two centre-backs had been more synchronised, let's say. So I think that's going to be something that Luis Enrique is going to focus on a lot, defensive. He might have to find another centre-back to go with Sergio Ramos. Maybe Nacho is not the adequate solution, but we'll have to see what he decides, because he's bringing on new men every time there's international break. So that's something we'll find out soon enough.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most fascinating things about the Luis Enrique reign, as young as it is so far, is that you don't know who is going to be in that squad list. It doesn't seem to matter who you play for if you are in good form and in contention. Let me chuck a name your way, Roman, on this particular point. You mentioned centre-backs, perhaps. Well, one person he said that actually might make the list in future is Iñigo Martinez if he carries on performing at the level that he's at? Do you think that he would be a useful option for Luis Enrique to have?
Well, of course. Iñigo Martinez has always been one of those names that we've talked a lot about in Spain, you know, as a future center back to take over Piqué, take over Ramos or whoever. So he's definitely one of the main picks for Luis Enrique. It's a matter of seeing whether he can adapt and he can demonstrate a constant high level game after game. So it's going to be interesting to see if Iñigo Martinez finally gets that position he surely desires.
Okay, right. Well, that's pretty much it for this first half of the podcast. We say goodbye to Roman. Roman, thank you very much indeed for joining me.
Thanks for having me, David.
Anytime. It's a busy week for Roman coming, especially in Barcelona, because as you may know, Ernesto Valverde's side have got some big games coming up, both domestically and in Europe. And we're also going to be discussing a couple of the Spain youth teams in detail with Ewan McTeer. That is coming up in a couple of ticks.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the La Liga Lowdown mini-pod with Redis Akanov, broadcast on SiriusXM FC 157 in North America. And having chatted in part one with Roman Derquer out in Barcelona about all things Spain as in the senior squad, let's now discuss a few more international football topics concerning Spain and to hear from Ewan McTeer, who is based in Madrid. Hello, Ewan. You've been away back in the motherland, haven't you? How was your trip to Scotland?
Yeah, very good. Saw a bit of Scottish football, but not quite as good quality as what we're used to in La Liga.
Not quite as warm over there, I gather.
That also, yeah.
Well, listen, I hope you are back in normal, warmer climes over in Madrid. And as we stand, we're recording this on a Monday night. We know the Spain youth team's still playing on this international break. The under-21s are away in Iceland on Tuesday in the final game of their Euro qualifying campaign, having beaten Albania 1-0 away from home last week. Rafa Mir scoring the goal in the 84th minute after coming off the bench. And it means that they have got 8 wins out of 9 in their qualifying group. They've already made the Euros for next year. This was a hard-fought victory, though, wasn't it, Ewan? They needed to be patient in this game.
Yeah, they really did, and it's, you know, they'd already having qualified for the tournament. I guess, you know, maybe the motivation isn't quite as there as it has been in the past. But yeah, maybe it's a good thing that, you know, they've shown that they can come through a game where things weren't going their way, where the opposition were playing better than most probably expected, better than they probably expected. But they've still been able to come away with a victory, and you know that's what you say when you get into February, March time, where a real contender for a league or for a Champions League is able to grind out a victory away from home. It's an old cliche, but you know sometimes that's the kind of result that you're happier by instead of maybe a 4-0 win.
Yeah, actually, Luis de la Fuente mentioned patience and trying to be a little bit more clinical in the finishing. And in terms of the game itself, well, yes, it was about breaking down the Albanian wall. And they eventually did that 6 minutes from time. And he actually made some bold changes in this match, didn't he? The Spain under-21 coach, bringing on Alfonso Pedraza, who we know is at Villarreal. Rafa Mir, who's playing his football in Segunda with Las Palmas, on loan from Wolves. And Dani Olmo, they all came on around the hour mark for Pablo Fornals, Borja Mayoral and Fabián Ruiz. Betis. The first two obviously playing in La Liga, and Fabian was with Betis last season but is now in Serie A. Perhaps the least well-known name, though, is Dani Olmo. Just tell us a little bit about him, Ewan, and what he brings.
Yeah, he's probably the least known name because he doesn't play in Spain. He plays in Croatia, playing for Dinamo Zagreb, which is quite unusual. There's been a lot of talk. Anyone who follows UK football or lives in the UK will know there's been a lot of talk in recent years about the desire and the wish to send English players or Scottish players or any British players abroad to experience different European leagues. And it's not something that's really talked about much in Spain. There are quite a lot of players do move to the Premier League, and a few maybe go to Serie A. But the ones that leave Spain, there's not many of them, and they definitely don't tend to go to Croatia to further their development. So it's an interesting prospect. Not only is he playing with a team that's competing for national titles, but he's getting European football. It's an interesting career path he's taken, an unusual one, but it seems to be going well for him.
And another new player who De La Fuente mentioned, another player who plays outside Spain, a fullback, Pol Lirola. What information can you give us on him, Ian?
Yeah, so like Dani Olmo, he's also Catalan. And again, he's another one who has moved abroad, and his route is a bit more tried and tested. He's gone to Serie A, and he's not the first. Came through the Espanyol and Barcelona youth systems, as many Catalans do, and then made the switch to Juventus about 3 years ago. He never really made it. Juventus went out on loan to Sassuolo, but impressed so much that they decided to go ahead and buy him outright. So he's, you know, made, again, another interesting career path. Maybe it's a debate we'll start to have if these guys really kick on and make the senior team, or if other guys take similarly exotic twist toward the senior La Roja side.
Let's go down the age categories then to the under-19s, because Spain have qualified for the elite round of qualifying ahead of next year's Euros in Armenia, a 3-0 victory over Belarus in Basel. Some names to look out for here. Barcelona's Abel Ruiz netting the first on 4 minutes, then Antonio Blanco of Real Madrid getting the second before the half hour, and it was Sergio Gomez, who was actually with Borussia Dortmund, so another example, who finished it off on the hour. So Spain, top of their group, 6 points from six as we record this podcast. They play Switzerland on Tuesday night, by which point we hope they will have made it 9 points out of nine. And a couple of other names to mention here, Ewan. Obviously, Ferran Torres, Valencia fans will know him. He's a terrific young winger. A lot is expected of him. He played the whole game. And another guy who started, Juan Miranda. He's got a lot of potential, hasn't he?
Yeah, he really has. So he's a left-back, and he's actually the guy that's the backup to Jordi Alba this season. Barcelona fans will know that Lucas Digne left in the summer and wasn't really replaced, but that's because the sporting department at Barcelona were confident enough in Juan Miranda to believe that he can make the step up if it's needed. So Juan Miranda is only 18 years old, and Barcelona have another left-back who was playing in the B team, which is Marc Cucurella, a difficult name to pronounce, and they sent him out on loan to Eibar because so he's 20 years old, 2 years ahead of Juan Miranda, but rather than keep him around to be the sort of backup left-back to Jordi Alba, they were willing to let him go out to Eibar and to keep Juan Miranda. That's a real statement of how much confidence they have in him.
OK, well, let's keep a close eye on those names and also, of course, who they're playing for, whether it be in La Liga or abroad. But from the young guns to the established senior players, let's focus back on La Liga. Look, Ewan, I know we've only had 8 rounds of games, but this season it has been especially competitive. It's the usual stick to try and beat La Liga with, which is that it's just like Scotland in the Celtic and Rangers days, just with money. But you can't say that about this season. Let's just try and illustrate that with one simple metric, really. If you just take the difference between the top team and the bottom team in each division, then this is how it looks in the five major European leagues. So Serie A have the biggest gap, 25 points after 8 games, because Juventus are on 24 and Chievo are on minus one. So that's why it's 25. Ligue 1, they have a 22-point difference between top and bottom after 9 games. PSG on 27, Guingamp on 5. In the Premier League, it's 18 points after 8 games. Man City on 20, Cardiff on 2. In the Bundesliga, it's a bit tighter, 12 points after 7 games, because Dortmund have 17 and VfB Stuttgart have 5. That's largely down to Bayern absolutely blowing it in the last few weeks, by the way. And in La Liga, it is the tightest table, 11 points between top and bottom after 8 games. Sevilla are the leaders, of course, on 16, and Huesca have 5. And of course, allied to that, Barcelona and Real Madrid have dropped points aplenty. Barca have dropped 9, Real Madrid 10. So how do you explain it?
Yeah, I think you have to go back to explain this to a few years ago when La Liga struck the new TV deal. So in the past, teams used to negotiate their own TV deals with the companies, and obviously this favoured the bigger sides, Barca and Real Madrid, because let's be honest, those are the matches most fans want to tune in for. But La Liga decided to adopt a similar approach to the Premier League and collectively bargain for the TV deals, the TV rights. And what they decided to do was to split the pie a little bit more evenly. So the collective bargaining has managed to help grow the pie. And on top of that, they're splitting the pie more evenly. So a lot of small clubs are now earning money that they would only have been able to dream of just a few years ago. You look at you know, some of the middle-class teams in La Liga, their TV income has gone up by, you know, three-figure percentages in the last few years. Barcelona and Real Madrid has gone up too, but by about 5-10%. Atletico's has gone up by about 50%. But all these sort of smaller teams are earning, you know, double what they were before. And obviously that, you know, money talks, and that translates into better squads, better wages, and as we're seeing this season, more competitive fixtures in La Liga. There's no real easy games now, especially when the big teams go away from home.
Yeah, I mean, it's mad to think that neither Barcelona nor Real Madrid have actually won any of their last three games. I can't remember the last time that will have happened. The last three match days that you won't have seen either a Barca victory or a Real Madrid victory. And of course, Barca losing at Leganés and Real Madrid losing both at the Sánchez Pizjuán against Sevilla and then also against Alaves at Mendizorroza. Of course, this weekend coming, we'll be almost a quarter of the way through after match day 9. And what a game to come back to. Barcelona take on Sevilla, which is second against first. And Barca, in fact, have a tricky trio of fixtures coming up in the next couple of weeks. Sevilla, as we mentioned, in La Liga, then Inter Milan in the Champions League, and then El Clásico against Real Madrid. I suppose, Ewan, the good thing for them is that they've got all of those games at home. So how crucial is this run of three matches over the course of 9 days?
Well, given, as we've just been talking about, the fact that Real Madrid are dropping points and Atletico are as well, maybe it's not so crucial that they get, you know, 6 points out of these two upcoming La Liga games. And in the Champions League, you know, a draw against Inter wouldn't be the worst, given that they've taken maximum points so far in Europe. So I don't think mathematically or in terms of their chances of winning these tournaments is crucial that they, you know, pick up 3 points, 3 points, 3 points. What I do think is crucial is that they change the attitude, you know. It's just not been good for Barcelona, and there's a real risk of getting stuck in the rut and losing that sort of winning mentality that they just had last season, where they didn't go undefeated in the end, but they went very close all the way up to, I think it was the second or third last game. So they approached every match expecting to win. There's a lot of young players in this squad, and, you know, confidence could struggle if they don't win. So I think it's crucial for the mentality more than anything that they start winning, especially against Sevilla.
Another thing they'll have to contend with is the news that Thomas Vermaelen injured his right hamstring playing for Belgium against Switzerland. He's set to be out for 6 weeks, they reckon. And this leaves him even more thin at the back, doesn't it? Because Samuel Umtiti has been struggling recently too.
Yeah, it really does. So it kind of leaves, you know, Gerard Piqué and Clement Lenglet as the only two. And not only have they maybe not been too convincing, the pair of them so far, but one more injury, one more suspension, and you've really got some problems. But there'll always be somebody that can step in, you know. Now that you've got Arthur in midfield, you know, if Busquets has to drop further back and Arthur play a bit more in the Busquets role, there's things you can do to solve these problems. I don't know, stick Ter Stegen in there at centre-back. I'm sure he'd do all right there. The problem is, as you mentioned, the upcoming games are very difficult ones, so you maybe can't get away with that against the likes of Inter Milan or Real Madrid. But yeah, it's not ideal. But who'd have thought it? Who'd have thought Barcelona fans would be nervous at the news of a Thomas Vermaelen injury? Mm. He's become their last hope.
He really has. We'll see how they fare in those three games. Obviously, as far as Inter Milan's concerned, well, they've got 6 points from six as well as Barcelona have. So it may well be it's just, you know, seeing who finishes top of the group, and both of them will qualify in any case. So not that crucial in terms of that particular game. But you never know with these sort of twists and turns that La Liga takes, the games against Sevilla and, of course, the Clásico at the Camp Nou, where Real Madrid tend to play better than they do at the Bernabeu. Now, at the other end of the league, we've had our first managerial casualty of the season, and it's come at New Boys Huesca, who ended up parting company with Leo Franco. They replaced him with Francisco Rodriguez, another new name for us. So what can you tell us about the new man, Ian?
Well, you know, he does have a bit of La Liga experience from his time with Almeria. And did you know, he actually won the Manager of the Month competition a couple of times. I think that kind of just goes down to the fact that Almeria were very hot and cold. When they were good, they were very good. When they were bad, they were very bad. And right now, Huesca are very bad. So it's a bit of a shame for Leo Franco. I mean, this was like his first professional coaching gig. after doing a bit of work with the youth system there. So for him to get so few games and to be kicked out when Huesca, who I think we can all admit have the least talented squad in the division, were the favourites for relegation, and they haven't done too bad. They haven't won since opening day, but they've won. We've seen this stage last season, there were two or three teams that hadn't won a game yet. So it's a shame for him, but we'll see how Francisco does. He's not overly experienced either. He's only 40 years old, so it sort of just seems like a similar kind of appointing a sort of inexperienced guy who's shown a bit of promise with youth teams and in the lower divisions and just hoping it works. I don't know. I'm not very convinced by it.
Yeah, I mean, Franco just lasting 8 games, wasn't it? Unbeaten the first 2, got 4 points from those, and then just 1 from the next 18 on offer. So, and it was the 8-2, wasn't it, at the Camp Nou that really set that run going. So he has been a little unfortunate, but in any case, now it is Francisco is the man who is taking them forward. They will hope. And of course, it's such a tight table. So, you know, you string some results together and maybe you can hop out of that bottom 3. Let's just look at all the games then that are coming up this weekend on Match Day 9. The Friday night game is at Balaidos, Celta against Alaves. And of course, the last team that they beat are Real Madrid. And they are in the lunchtime game at home to Levante. So that's at 1 p.m. Central Eastern Time. Then we head to Mestalla for Valencia against Leganés, followed by another big game in the Valencian community, which is Villarreal at home to Atletico. Pressure on Javi Calleja there would probably rip your arm off for a point right now against the team who are currently sitting third. And the Saturday night game, Barcelona versus Sevilla, as we've mentioned, second against first. Big, big game in La Liga. Then we head to Sunday and we start off with a derby in the capital. Rayo Vallecano against Getafe at Vallecas, and then we head up to the Basque Country for another derby as Eibar take on Athletic. On Sunday evening, we've got Huesca versus Espanyol, so that first game for Francisco against Rubi's side, who've done very, very well so far, sitting in, what is it now, 5th place. And then Sunday night, Real Betis against Real Valladolid, who've also picked up recently 7th place with 12 points, would you believe. Very, very good performance so far for the newly promoted side. The Monday night game is at Anoeta between Real Sociedad and Girona. So what tempts you out of that list, Ewan? What are the main talking points, would you say?
Well, I think Sevilla Barcelona has got to be interesting with it being the champions against the league leaders. But the one I think I'm most looking forward to is Villarreal against Atletico Madrid, because as poor as Villarreal have been this season, this is a fixture where they've won the last 3 in the last 3 seasons when Atletico have visited. 2-1 last year, they've won 3-0 a couple of years ago when Atletico were really, really poor, probably the worst game they've had under Simeone, and 1-0 the year before that. In fact, since Simeone took over on his 6 visits, he's only won twice. So this is a tricky fixture for Atletico Madrid. Villarreal, I don't know why, but they seem to step up. I think their style suits playing Atletico Madrid quite well. So this is, you know, Atletico are going to be favourites given the form coming into this one. But after an international break and time to prepare for this, and with Calleja's job on the line, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Villarreal cause Atletico problems.
I'm going to pick out Eibar against Athletic. Athletic are under a little bit of pressure under Toto Berizzo. So even though they've actually drawn against both Real Madrid and Barcelona so far this season, but they are just above that relegation zone. Yes, they have played one game fewer because that game against Rayo was postponed, of course, but they head to Ipurua and Eibar are not going to make their life easy. So that's the one that I think might have a little bit of intrigue to it as well. Well, just before we go, guys, just to remind you of a way you can find all of our content on all platforms as La Liga returns is, of course, our Twitter feed. We'll have all the reaction to the Spain-England game and also build up to the return on Match Day 9 of La Liga. You can head to at La Liga Lowdown on Twitter. Just have a little nose around, get to know us. There's our YouTube channel as well. So that's youtube.com/C/La Liga Lowdown. We'll put this podcast up as another way for you to listen. Plus, we've got Partidazo predictions on the way each and every Friday, by the way. Rapid roundup on the Monday and some other bits and pieces that crop up too from time to time. Our website has info on all of our squad, not just you and myself, but Alex Paco Roman. You can find all of our content there too, so visit www.laligalowdown.com. and finally, as far as this podcast is concerned, feel free to rate us 5 stars, give us a nice review if you like what you're hearing, and you can also hear it in North America during the regular weeks of the season on SiriusXM FC 157. My thanks to Ewan McTeer. Thank you for joining me.
No problem, always a pleasure.
Thank you also to you for listening. That's your La Liga Lowdown. We'll see you next time.
This was a Radio Staccato production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.